Hello, hello. Good evening, New York. Thank you for tuning in to The Rundown on WNYU 89.1 FM here in New York City and online everywhere at WNYU.org. I'm your host, Aria Young, and today we have four stories prepared for you. First, we will hear from Amaya McDuffie about security cameras being installed in New York and the controversy around it. Then we'll hear from M. Ingram about a controversial religious group called the Jews for Jesus that has been active around the NYU campus recently. After that, we have a story from Isabella Friedrich, who attended the Respect show at King's Theater dedicated to the celebration of Aretha Franklin. Finally, we'll hear from Bridget Rudolph about the Syrian puppet Little Amal, who had just visited New York City for a few weeks. And don't forget to stay with us till the end to find out what happened today in history. So without further ado, let's dive right into the news. Our first story today is something that concerns most New York commuters, including myself. I take the subway every day for like 40 minutes. I guess it's like 80 minutes round trip. So due to the concerns about crime and passenger safety on New York City subways, the Metropolitan Transit Authority is planning to equip all stations and subways with new security cameras. While some New Yorkers find comfort in the new initiative, others raise concerns. Amaya McDuffie has the story.
Last month, New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced that the Metropolitan Transit Authority had received a $2 million federal grant to install cameras in every New York City subway car to broaden security coverage and increase passenger safety and comfortability. The announcement comes in wake of decreased ridership in the system. According to the MTA, in the week of September 20th, ridership averaged about 64% of comparable pre-pandemic levels. Crime within the system has slowed within recent months, with a roughly 21% decrease in transit-related crime over the summer. However, New Yorkers still share concerns. Natalie Fisman, Kate Wilkins, and MJ Walkup are students at NYU's College of Arts and Sciences.
Sometimes I feel like I have to take the subway, but in reality, it's not the safest, so I would rather walk, but it would take me longer.
It's sometimes hard to judge whether it's going to be easier to feel unsafe on the subway or just walk and accept the longer journey.
People like getting pushed on the tracks or like getting mugged, and it definitely makes me a little fearful to use the subway because I just don't want something like that to happen to me.
The funding will allow the MTA to install more than 10,000 cameras across the transit network by 2025. That's about 2 security cameras per subway car and approximately 29 per subway station. In his comment on the initiative, New York Mayor Eric Adams said, quote, "Public safety is my top priority, and this new security initiative will further work to ensure that all New Yorkers can get to where they need to go safely," end quote. Some, like NYU student Gabrielle Zimmerman, agree with the mayor.
I definitely feel comfortable with cameras because, like, I've taken the subway to the airport at, like, early times, and I just, like, if anything were to happen, I want someone to be able to, like, see who, like, mugged me or did something to me. And I know that, like, some of the subways right now have, like, emergency buttons, and, like, I feel so safe in those ones because, like, if I were to see anything happen, I could just easily press a button. So I definitely think there should be more, like, resources available on the subway, whether it's cameras or, like, emergency buttons.
However, other New Yorkers share concerns about surveillance.
I really don't like the idea of being on camera and being watched. Like, you don't know who's behind the camera. Like, what are they using the surveillance for? Also, with the cameras, I feel like, one, it puts people who, like, have to hop the subways because they can't afford to pay for it under watch, which seems like classist or, like, a weird issue with, like, feeling like they have to watch people who are poorer and maybe aren't paying for the subway every single time.
At a press conference a week after the announcement, Governor Hochul responded to these concerns.
So you think Big Brother's watching you on the subways? You're absolutely right. That is our intent, to get the message out that we are going to be having surveillance of activities on the subway trains, and that is going to give people great peace of mind.
So, is the new initiative actually interested in fighting crime, or is it more focused on the perception of the New York transit system as a whole, making prospective riders feel more comfortable getting on and paying for the subway?
I'm Amaya McDuffie. This is The Rundown.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Thank you, Amaya. That was a great piece. So the next one is a local news as well. So the organization Jews for Jesus has been near NYU's campus for ages. But what exactly are the group's true motives? Some NYU students also reported to have recently had unpleasant experiences with the group. M. Ingram has the scoop.
There's no way this is a real thing. This can't exist. In the moment, I treated it like the comical moment that it was, because Jews for Jesus handing out New Testament quotes saying, come to our Shabbat service, feels like something out of like an old Monty Python skit. But no, it is real. And it was only after I thought about it for a little bit that I started to have a couple questions.
With WNYU's The Rundown, I'm Em Ingram, and today I want to talk about Jews for Jesus, a non-denominational independent mission which relies on individual and church donations for funding that has recently made a presence on campus. I first learned about the group from my friend Pasha, who encountered the Jews for Jesus booth on their way to class one day.
About 2.5 weeks ago, I was walking by the Starbucks next to Washington Square Park, and I saw a table, and it seemed like a table of Jewish people. And typically I like to, you know, go introduce myself to Jewish communities in the area, see if I can get involved, see what their mission is. But it was interesting. I saw that this table was not just a table for Jews, but it was a table for Jews for Jesus. They had a big question asking, do you think that humanity is naturally good or naturally bad? And I answered, said my little piece, didn't think a whole lot of it, and was able to get myself a free goodie bag, and I even got a little nectarine in the goodie bag too. I thought that was a fine interaction until I opened the bag and I saw a Bible verse actually from the New Testament, and I was like, wait a second, these people are claiming themselves to be Jewish, and yet I've just seen a quote from them from the New Testament, which is a pretty overwhelmingly Christian text.
Jews for Jesus' fluffed up and vague mission statement and their seemingly kind gestures on the street surely would leave those who interact with them confused about their true intentions. On their website, Jews for Jesus describes themselves as the following.
Jews for Jesus is an organization comprised of Jewish people who've come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah that the Tanakh prophesied would come.
As an organization, we do a variety of things. We host events like Shabbat dinners and high holiday services. We do bar and bat mitzvah training and camp programs. We go out on the street, talk to people, and hand out cold brew coffee. We also give back by cleaning up city parks and partnering with local charities. But most of what we do is sit down with people, study the scriptures, and discuss whether Jesus could be the Jewish Messiah.
Jews for Jesus is a primarily Christian organization which functions under the guise of Judaism. Founded in San Francisco in 1970 by the ethnically Jewish Christian convert Moshe Rosen, Jews for Jesus is an international messianic Jewish nonprofit who primarily attempts to convert ethnically Jewish people, which in the Jewish faith is considered an offensive practice. Rosen, after his conversion and becoming a Baptist minister, joined the American Board of Missions to the Jews, where he began to attempt to convert other Jewish people. He realized that he wasn't very successful in his conversion, so he started Jews for Jesus, which proved to be more successful since they claim that you can maintain your Jewish identity whilst believing Jesus Christ is the Lord and Savior.
The more time that I've spent with the Jews for Jesus, thinking about them and talking to them and seeing them on the street, the more I've realized how they've co-opted Judaism into sort of a brand of Christianity. I actually had a friend who was walking by, and every time she walks by, she flips them off and is very passionate about the fact that these people are Christians who are attempting to prophetize under a Jewish identity, which is a very non-Jewish thing to do. She felt hurt by that. She felt like these people were taking her religion, taking our religion, to try to shift some of the blame from Christians.
Despite its name, Jews for Jesus is not considered a Jewish organization by rabbinic Jewish authorities, who view Jesus as either a good Jewish teacher or a false prophet, as opposed to a messianic figure. Again, the organization is considered offensive for its attempt to convert Jewish people, as they also attempt to deter people from the Jewish faith through co-opting and erasing the religion. Context can be very useful and helpful for navigating interactions with potentially controversial groups like Jews for Jesus. I hope this context has been helpful. And with WNYU's The Rundown, this has been M. Ingram.
All right. So in arts and entertainment news this week, there is a show at King's Theater called R-E-S-P-E-C-T, A Celebration of the Music of Aretha Franklin. So Aretha Franklin was an iconic American singer, songwriter, and pianist. She was referred to as the Queen of Soul. Our reporter Isabella Friedrich went to the press junket and brought us the story.
RESPCT, A Celebration of the Legendary Queen of Soul, is a national tour kicking off the King's Theater in Brooklyn, October 6th, 7th, and 8th. The tribute concert celebrates the life and music of the late Aretha Franklin. Directed by Broadway's Christina Seju and the producers of A Simon and Garfunkel Story, the tribute is a mosaic of Aretha Franklin's life and celebrated music career. It is an adaptation of the Australian tour Respect, the Aretha Franklin story, except this version refuses to cast the character of Aretha. It is not a dramatization of the Queen's life, so instead we have a lead singer and hosts. The vocalists embody the spirit of Aretha. Natalie Randall, who is host one of the show, shares what Aretha means to her.
My connection to Aretha is beyond personal. She has been an icon for me since I was born, literally, almost at my age, to be able to be in a show singing her music, dressing up, and portraying myself and singing all her songs for people. It's literally a dream come true. You know, it lets us also be ourselves. I get to embody Natalie's treasure, who plays Aretha character. She can embody treasure.
Daughter of the well-known Detroit preacher Clarence L. Franklin, Aretha developed her voice as a gospel singer in the 1950s. She maintained her gospel roots until the very end. With an airy mid-register and vibrating upper range, Aretha Franklin sang with ardor, authority, and passion. She was creating music during a poignant and grievous time of American history, with race riots and the assassinations of key civil rights leaders. By the late 1960s, she had become a prominent figure in the Black Power movement. Her music is a striking intersection between feminism and Black power, with her iconic anthem, Respect, being an equal rights battle cry. At the Respect tour, the audience is encouraged to get up and dance in this immersive celebration of the Queen of Soul. For The Rundown on WNYU 89.1 FM, this has been Isabella Friedrich. Long time coming, but I know
change gonna come. And that was Isabella Friedrich about Aretha Franklin. Finally, you might have heard about Little Malt recently. She is a giant puppet of a 10-year-old Syrian refugee girl who had just visited New York and left last week. Bridget Rudolph recaps her stay in New York, and here's the story.
From WNYU 89.1 FM, I'm Bridget Rudolph. New York City is a mixing pot of different immigrants from around the world, but for the past few weeks, NYC has had a guest like no other. She's 10 years old, loves cookies, came from Syria, and is a 3.5-meter-tall animatronic puppet. You may know her as Little Amal. Little Amal is the centerpiece of the Walk Project, meant to highlight both the struggles and successes of refugees around the world. Since her public debut in Turkey in July of 2021, Amal has traveled over 9,000 kilometers across 13 countries to represent the journey taken by children and families fleeing war, violence, and persecution. Her message and the message of the Walk Project, don't forget about us. Amal landed in New York City on September 14th and has since toured its five boroughs and met with many refugees. I got to see Little Amal at the Winter Garden Center and meet with some of the people who came out to see her and hear their thoughts on the walk project.
Well, I think it's awesome. It's great to, you know, give awareness and help everybody feel a bit more included.
It's amazing. It's amazing, and the kids, they have to be safe all the time.
Many people even brought flags they decorated with different messages of peace.
This flag is about, it's in Spanish, and it's about a message that all women, we have to fight together for us.
The celebration of Little Amal's visit was big. Refugee and immigrant guest speakers told their stories, and there were musical performances from artists such as world-renowned jazz musician Kinan Azme and his band, and the Pinchuntu Multinational Girls Choir. While Amal did eventually have to leave, I caught up with Kinan Azme after the show and asked what he hopes people will take away from Little Amal.
I think two things, like the takeaway can be two things. One of them is, I hope that people are moved by what they see from an artistic perspective, which for me is the most important. And the other thing is to question what makes people leave their homes to begin with. I hope it triggers in the back of people's minds, not looking at the refugee crisis independently. You have to look at the reasons why do people leave home in the first place. It's an artistic reaction to a very dark situation, you know? And it's an uplifting to see Amal, you know, traveling the world, crossing borders where so many people cannot.
Sadly, Little Amal has taken her leave of New York City as of October 2nd. While she will certainly be missed, we understand that she and her message of hope are needed elsewhere. From WNYU 89.1 FM, this has been Bridget Rudolph.
And that was all for our stories tonight. For our historical fact of the day, on this day in 2011, Apple's co-founder Steve Jobs died. I actually remember that day because I was 10 and I was visiting a family friend's house and I saw it on the news. And I remember thinking, oh my God, like he's so young, and I couldn't believe that it happened. Anyway, I'm sorry that the show is ending on such a sad note. But that's all for the rundown tonight. If you liked what you heard or want to hear something different, if you want to submit a tip or for a story, you can email me at associatenews@wnyu.org. I hope you enjoyed the show today. I will be here next Wednesday, 7 p.m., to bring you more local alternative news. I'm Aria Young, and this has been The Rundown on WNYU 89.1 FM.